This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
Welcome to Province Sports Radio. It's Tuesday, April 5th. It's Casual Tuesday. Patrick Johnson here on the line. Steve Ewan. Hi, Steve. You're not in your car.
I'm not in my car. I'm just back from beautiful downtown Kamloops.
Yes.
Where we got to cover the Women's World Championships for what, 10 days or something?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was nice to be back in the Lower Mainland.
Now,
back in this time zone.
There you go. Is it a different time zone in Kamloops?
No, it's not. No.
For those of us who've never been to the beautiful Thompson country, is that what they call it?
Boca Valley, all that kind of stuff.
Boca Valley, there you go. Now, Steve, obviously we're going to talk a fair bit about the Women's World Championships, but I'm wondering, as you found yourself driving down the Coquihalla this morning, what did you find yourself thinking about?
Wondering what the Vancouver Canucks are up to. Wondering how my fantasy baseball teams were going to do.
Oh, there you go.
So, those two things are not exactly connected.
Now, no reflecting on the last 10 days of hockey action that you just witnessed?
Oh, yeah. No, I think there's some of that. I think it was fun. I went to Finland in 2009 to cover the Women's World in Hämeenlinna, Finland. As preparation for the 2010 Olympics. So I had kind of comparing and contrasting to that experience and how much better overall I think the women's game has gotten in the last 7 or 8 years.
Now, that was something I still commented on, was that, yeah, I know Finland, you know, pushed Canada a little bit there on Sunday in the semis. But once again, mm-hmm. It was a Canada-U.S. final, and it's a Canada
17 straight world championships. Every world since 1990 has had a Canada-U.S. final.
It's a problem, isn't it?
I think it's certainly doesn't help the game's credibility.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of at play. I think Finland is dramatically better. I also think the states in Canada are dramatically better. So I think that's kind of at issue as well, right? I think it's going to be hard to catch those two teams.
It surely is a talking point nonetheless. I'm sure people, you know, at the arena who think about this stuff, what do they talk about, you know, the likes of Russia and Finland and Sweden and whoever else needing to get at least closer to the leading edge?
I think it's just a matter of getting their better athletes in the country playing hockey and getting hockey to the point where it's as popular as that. I think something as simple as the two women's pro leagues merging and creating a situation where the best Finnish players and the best Russian players and the best Swedish players have a chance to go play year round or in a pro type atmosphere. I think that would create some interest in the game back in those countries.
In the sense that it just would give a new...
It would give profile to their hockey athletes.
Okay.
You throw the tag pro on anything, and it's suddenly a lot more interesting.
So all of a sudden, everyone's saying she's not just a hockey player, she's a professional hockey player.
She's a professional hockey player, and she's playing in whatever the league would be called in North America. Yeah.
That, you know, that was something you wrote about over the weekend. It was an interesting piece looking at the fact that there is this NWHL in the U.S., which is paying its players a little bit, and there's the Canadian Women's League, which, you know, pays for their trips, and that's about it. But they say they're going to pay them starting, I guess, a year from now.
Yeah, 17, 18, yeah.
If you had to say that's going to happen, how strongly...
I think that's all conjecture, but I think... the players are very much for one league, and I think each league is for one league. It just happens to be they want their own league.
And they want it to be their model.
And they'd like to wipe out the other one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how they you know, they need some superpower to come in and kind of take the reins and have the credibility to affect both sides. And whoever that is, I don't think they've come up with that just yet.
Yeah, it's interesting. I read an interesting piece that I posted in the Morning Skate from Boston Globe looking at, it was from a couple of years ago, but looking at sort of professional women's soccer, and they talked a little bit about, and you're going to have to help me, because which is the Boston team in the CWHL?
Is the Boston Blades.
The Blades. So they talked about the Blades a little bit. And they just talked a bit about all of the problems, which is, you know, the there's just the money behind it all is not as big. You know, so you get stuck in these smaller arenas. There's just not the same kind of buzz that, you know, the traditional sports all have. You know, we look at the WNBA, which has managed to make it work, has been around for, you know, almost 20 years now, I guess.
But okay.
But even late 90s. But you know, even then, you know, it still struggles for attention. It's a niche sport that I guess still works. Women's soccer, which, you know, obviously the American women's team, which draws huge crowds and is much more successful than the men, are still dealing with the fact that, you know, there's a perception around it that they're not paid very much, which is true. And that perception that they're just not the same kind of profile as the men's athletes, even though they're more successful and more consistently bigger crowds for the national team, but they haven't been able to translate that into the club game. And so I kind of go there, well, if they can't make it work for women's soccer, how are they going to make it work for women's hockey in North America?
You wonder if it's not a situation where they become a kind of an affiliate team of an NHL club, and it becomes part of your you know, season ticket package to go watch a Canucks game. Is you also have the opportunity to buy tickets for whatever the team would be called. Right, I think it's very. They're going to need the NHL to get on board, and they're going to need to give the NHL reasons to get on board. I think if you look at the Olympic TV viewership in Canada, it's been very good. Whether you can get someone to buy into the fact that you can do very good numbers on a regular basis rather than once every 4 years, that'll be the challenge.
You know, it's an interesting one to bring up the NHL on that, because, you know, you look at the Canucks. You know, they own their rink. They're always going to be looking for tenants. You know, and if they had a women's team that played, I don't know, a 25-game season or something like that, or how many games does CWHL play?
I'm mixing and matching the games. I think they were 22 or something.
So I'm 25. So yeah, but 25 is the right ballpark. You know, I mean, you fill that in, you play, you know, from December to March as it kind of is now. I could see that being an appealing item to them. I know, you know, they're not making tons of money, but you can use your, you know, team infrastructure that's already there. You know, you've already got a ticket sales office. You've already got, you know, an ice crew. You've already got all the other bits and bobs that you need to run a professional team. It's certainly in a marketplace where, you know, they're catching a lot of criticism. That certainly would be a nice story for them to tell, wouldn't it?
Oh, and I think there's a chance. I think people that have caught on to the Canada-US rivalry would catch on to the pro game. I think the challenge is going to be just finding that initial capital to get the thing going. I think it's got a chance to fly. I think, again, once you get the best Canadians and the best Americans and Spiegel and the three or four best Russians and the five or six best Finns and the three or four best Swedes, I think you've got an entertaining maybe six or 18 league.
It's, you know, and I sit there and I think, I mean, we talk a lot about the Giants on this podcast, and we've talked a lot about the Stealth, two teams that don't have huge crowds. But, you know, I don't think it'd be stretching the imagination that a women's hockey team couldn't draw a similar crowd.
Yeah, I think so. If it was promoted correctly, I think if they started small and tried to keep the quality really high, and I think there's reasons for it to be appealing. I think it would, I think it might get you a different demographic. I think the female sports, you know, the fans of female sports, you know, get maybe a more varied, very demographic. I think there's a lot to like about it.
So let's talk about some Canucks here now. You know, obviously all our eyes are on the future now, and noise that perhaps they'll try to go after Brock Boeser this summer, Thatcher Demko as well. Both of them playing Frozen Four this weekend. To me, that strikes me as a no-brainer. I kind of wrote a bit about it in the Morning Skate the other day, saying, "Listen, I think go get Brock Boeser. I think it makes sense. You know, you can send him to the AHL. There's nothing to lose. The kid's had a great year in the NCAA, and clearly was at least as good as his peers, better than his peers, in fact, and perhaps to some surprise. Get him into the pro game. I mean, to me, it seems like a no-brainer.
Does he turn 20? Sorry, does he turn 20?
He turns 19 this year, but he's not under the CHL agreement, right? They can send him to the AHL.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's no junior problem, right? He doesn't have it. He's not played in the dub or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he can go play. He could go play for Utica next year, and they could give him some NHL time if they wanted.
Yeah.
To me,
interesting. I'm not clear on the rule, but yeah.
Yeah. No, he is. I mean, I went and looked this the other day. That is something that they could do with him if they wanted. To me, Demko, they've got to get Demko, and they've got to get Demko playing the AHL. I don't see, you know, for where they want to end up, you know, in two seasons, let alone next year.
You need him to be ready to pair with Markstrom.
Exactly. Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, even if you really look far ahead, you do the Crawford plan, you know, what you end up doing is that you have Demko in the AHL for the next two seasons, and you pair Markstrom with, you know, an AHL veteran, an NHL veteran, you know, sort of a Andrew Raycroft type guy,
you know,
for another season. And then, you know, Demko's your guy 2 years from now. So.
Yeah, no, I think they need to get their development plan kind of fast tracking a little bit. I think more than that, they need to figure out what they're doing with their defense.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of, but you know, Padana's a swingman.
I
could see if you were overflowing with defensive prospects, but I don't see them having that many guys in the back that are that kind of reliable or high end. It doesn't, you know, I don't get it. I don't get where they're going.
You know, I've always found I've been thinking about this with exactly Padana in mind, that the sort of the traditional angle on the swingman, which is that you're like sixth or seventh defenseman, is a guy that you're happy to play on the fourth line. And I'm sitting here going, what about flip that on its head? Wouldn't you rather, I mean, if you've got a guy that you can sort of play depth minutes on the back end in a pinch, if you're desperate for a winger, why don't you move up your number four guy who can actually play a little bit and give him a go, Brett Burns style? I mean, Brett Burns obviously has turned out to be a much better player than that, but you know, why not?
But they don't have a guy like that, though.
That's true. But why not? But you know what I mean? Why not throw Matt Bartkowski up front? The guy can skate anyway.
Yeah, that's a little bit more realistic. Or see if Subban has got some sort of chance of playing up front.
Right. Yeah.
To me, trying to take a young guy and turn him into a swingman is something you do when you're overflowing with assets.
Yeah.
Looking to find a way to get him on the team.
Yeah.
And I think their defense is so wide open that you'd think he'd have a chance at actually competing for a 5, 6, 7 slot next year.
I don't even know what it
I don't get it.
I don't know what it means for him going forward. That's what I'm kind of worried about. Cause like, you know, are you already chucking him overboard? Like, is that what we're concluding here?
It seems like it. There's no good reason at this juncture.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you wonder if Barkowski's back. You wonder if Ham Hughes is back. You wonder if Yannick Weber's back. Well, there's suddenly a lot of jobs that could be open.
And a whole lot of guys that are all really not that great.
Yeah, fair enough. But it's not like there's, you know, a wealth of up and coming, you know, defensemen that you're looking to clear space for either.
That's true. That is true.
So I could almost see it more likely if they were trying to turn a forward into a defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't understand where he's. I think he's done enough to merit getting some sort of chance rather than trying to play with him. I think it's a dangerous. There's not been a huge history. A huge history of those guys working out to any sort of long term kind of asset, right?
Isn't it interesting how in the middle of all this, the Canucks have pulled together their first 3-win streak of the season?
Yeah, but this is to steal a basketball phrase. We're definitely in garbage time.
Well, that was Henrik's point, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Eric Rolfson made an interesting observation this morning that when we're writing Morning Skates 20 years from now, which in its own was a great proposition that we will be doing this 20 years from now, that we will talk about the Canucks' little run to end the 2015-2016 season where they pulled themselves out of consideration for a top-end pick. It will be talked about the way people who are who remember talk about the spinning the wheel and not landing Gilbert Perreault. That was his bold prediction for the future.
Oh, I don't. Yeah, that's that's an interesting one. I think if you could sell the fact that they were going to be bad enough to get one, either Austin Matthews or either the two Finns.
Yeah.
I wonder. I just. Part of I don't know if they were going to be that bad. And I think everything I read anywhere from 4 to 9 or 12 is kind of the same.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I'm interested. Somebody was suggesting on Twitter somewhere that they could be in space, kind of the Dante Fabro kind of space.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah. Which, a guy to me, they have to draft a D-man.
Oh, I think without a doubt.
So, to get a kid, lower mainland kid, I think it's kind of a nice nice bonus in the event it's Fabro.
Yeah, I mean, to me, if I don't know how you do it, but to me, there would be a way to add a forward, but it's hard, so hard to add a defenseman anywhere but the draft that, it just seems like such a no-brainer at this point.
As good as Tanev has been, there's not really a legitimate number one guy on this team.
Yeah. No, there isn't.
And the only way you're going to find one of those guys is draft-wise. No one's going to trade him. And, those guys don't ever get to free agency.
Yeah. 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 Blue Jays, fantasy baseball. You mentioned fantasy baseball before. How is your fantasy team doing? Are you happy with where you're at? Is it looking like what you wanted to look like?
I missed my Mojo Pool draft because I was in Kelowna, but he had a buddy do the draft for me, and he got Chris Sale and
Yan
Gomez.
There you go.
Yeah, he did. I mean, I already had Stroman, I already had Osuna,
nice.
I already had Zach Britton out of Baltimore.
Nice, I have him too.
Kyle Sager.
Nice. So
I had a decent team, and then in my Terry McKegg league.
Mm-hmm.
Which Terry McKeag's no longer a part of, but that's a whole other story for another time.
That's why it's a Terry McKeag Memorial League, right?
Yeah, he doesn't like it when we say that. So, I had finished out of the playoffs 2 years ago and managed to get Carlos Correa, Corey Sager,
nice.
And then in free agency, this year I got Altuve, I got Kluber, I also got AJ Pollock, which I'm not too happy about right now. So, but I got Arrieta back for another year. He was a keeper, so
nice one.
I think I got a shot in that one.
I felt very good about my draft. My keepers were pretty good to begin with. They're nicely priced, so I was able to hold on to Carlos Gomez, and I had some other guys that were, I think, good finds. I ended up with Albert Pujols.
I don't know if I could take Carlos Gomez under the rule that you can't take a guy you can't cheer for.
I know what you're saying.
And the bat flip stuff bothers me.
I know it bothers you. It doesn't bother me.
Yeah. Okay.
It doesn't bother me. Did you see Bryce Harper's new hat, by the way?
No.
He's wearing a make baseball fun again. It's the white Trump hat, but obviously not Trump.
Oh, geez. Eh?
I think it's great. Piss you right off.
There you go.
I ended up with Albert Pujols, which I know is, he's on the decline, but a good value for him. Because I already had a bunch of nice guys. I got Steven Souza for a song. The thing I'm most worried about was I needed a power bat, and I had to kind of roll the dice, and I've ended up with Carlos Beltran. And I'm a bit worried about him. But we have to address five outfielders and a utility spot. And a corner spot, and a middle infield spot, and then infield spots. So it's a deep, 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 deep league.
How many teams?
17.
Okay. Yeah. And both leagues are just AL.
Both leagues. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah. The keg league is interesting because there's no drops.
Oh.
Yeah. So you need to get some guys right off the bat. And if you get it, one of a rival team ended up without a backup shortstop and ended up with Johnny Peralta.
Oh.
So that kind of puts you in a bad spot where you're forced to do it.
Now, I've had a nice start to the year. I had to roll the dice on my middle infield spot. I went with Trevor Story.
Yeah, I wonder how long that could have
gone. Yeah, I don't know, but I'm just going to ride it because he's my backup infielder, and I'm just going to ride it as long as he goes. And then I'll figure it out. Anyway, I can make some drops. Kevin Pillar sliding, hit his head on the wall. How long until Kevin Pillar? Mm-hmm. Did you see this catch he made yesterday?
Yeah.
Yeah. How long until Kevin Pillar is made of?
You wonder if someone's not going to sit him down and say, "Hey, kid, you need to pick your spots."
Well, yeah.
On the flip side, you don't want to take that kind of energy and enthusiasm out of his game.
Well, so. I mean, his defensive value is so strong.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to lose that guy.
Yeah. Well, and batting leadoff in that lineup, that's a pretty good, that's going to give him a chance to do some things offensively as well. Because, with Donaldson behind you, you're going to see some pitches to hit.
Oh, God, yeah. No kidding. And Tulo.
And, Batista and Encarnacion all behind him.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's
funny. I heard somebody talking on the radio today saying, "Oh, geez, yeah, but they could really use a left-handed bat." Those guys, are so good offensively. Could be a pitcher with three arms. They're still going to get on.
That batting lineup made the ALCS last year. I'm not worried about their ability to hit left-handed pitchers.
Yeah,
or right-handed pitchers, or what?
I don't think there's a right-hander in the game that's going to come in and absolutely dominate them time after time.
Yeah. Oh no, no doubt.
Flip side, if they had a bunch of. If they had five or six lefty bats in the lineup, you could see some of the,
because
there's so few lefties in the game that are very good lefty.
Yeah.
Pitching staff could do some things.
Yeah. Do you think they take the AL East? This is a question people keep asking me. My answer is yes, I do think they do.
Yeah, I think you're asking a lot of Stroman. I think you're asking a lot of the pitching. I mean, David Price. Just the idea that you've got David Price going out there, has got to, bring some confidence to the guys behind him. So now you're trying to make it go without him.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. Yeah. No. The Price. There's no denying that losing Price was a tough one. But
Well, losing probably, you know, and not going out and getting a kind of a stud guy.
Yeah, very true. But now, like you said, they're putting it all in on Stroman, and you know what? I have confidence he can do it.
Yeah, interesting guy. Very small guy. You wonder about longevity for him, but we will see how that plays.
I'm not talking about his career. I'm just talking about this year. That's all I wanted
just
to
talk about. Well, that's why I'm talking about everything.
Yeah. All right, Steve, we got to go here. Who do you got in your Sunday barbecue this week?
I am bringing Emirates Mashmeyer from the Canadian women's hockey team.
Nice.
Who put on a show in Kamloops.
Nice.
City where her brother played, older brother Bronson played 3 years of WHL with Kamloops Blazers. So.
Love it.
Harvard products, so she'd be fun to talk various things with, sitting around the pool having a burger and maybe an adult beverage.
She, that was a neat one, was just seeing how strong the Canadian goaltending scene is for the women, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely, you know, with Shannon Zavados off playing pro, you wondered where, you know, how things were going to kind of play out for them. Mashmeyer was very good throughout. I had a lot of fun in that game. That's one of the, you know, the more intense, exciting events that I've got a chance to cover in the last 5 or 6 years.
In a similar vein, I'm going to invite Jessica Mendoza, who is now the regular in-booth commentator for ESPN Sunday Night Baseball. I thought she joined the crew last September after Curt Schilling was kicked off
for doing what Curt Schilling does,
for being a massive you know what. No, and you know what? Because of course I went away last September and was in Europe. I didn't really get a chance to really, see what she does. And she did a great job, I thought, on Sunday night. I thought exactly, you know, I mean, you didn't even realize, you know, she just was an analyst. The fact that she's a woman was, you know, completely immaterial to the situation, and that's how it should be. Anyway, interesting new voice. Talk about baseball, and I think she'd have she also would enjoy an adult beverage,
and she would probably get along well with Emma's Mashmeyer. We actually got a chance to see Jessica play a few times at Softball City as part of the old Canada Cup and Canada Women's Open. She could swing it.
Yeah. So there you go. All right, Steve. It's always a slice.
I'm glad we didn't miss this week. BB Lee will be happy.
Yeah, folks, sorry about that. There were some, as I've said, there are some technical battles that we're having here, but shouldn't be a problem from now on. And Steve, as always, is on Twitter at Steve Ewan. I'm on Twitter at Rising Action. You can find us provincesports.com/radio. Where can you find that, Steve?
I think you can find it on the internet.
Yeah, you can. Exactly. And internet, by the way, now is lowercase I. AP has chimed in. That's the lowercase I is now stopped. And we're on Stitcher on TuneIn. You can find us in iTunes just for Provinces Sports. Steven, we'll see you again next week.
Thanks, sir.